Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The action never ends at DraftKings Sportsbook, especially this summer. With tons of ways to bet on all your favorite sports, you can fuel your fandom and feel the heat of the season like never before. Plus, right now, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving new customers a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's right, make your first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't win, you get another shot to cash in. You can throw down on all the major action for baseball, golf, MMA, and more. Plus, same-game parlays, spreads, money lines, over-unders, and props, your betting options feel endless. Yeah, guys, with all the baseball, of course, the trade deadline happened. All the teams are loading up. You know, that could maybe take a look at some futures actions. How about Aaron Judge? Is he going to break the home run record? You know, check out those odds. Best of all, DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code THPN. Make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code THPN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply.
Want to go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 232 of The Big Show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? It's the power of scheduling, folks. Hopefully it's easy like Sunday morning for you. It's Sunday and I am waking up in the City of Champions, Edmonton, Alberta. Of course, I am in Edmonton for the Ice Wars 2 tournament that actually, well, as you're listening to this, it happened last night at the River Cree Casino. Eight bouts as well as a cruiserweight tournament. And I hope it went well. We're in a time warp here, folks. I am actually recording this intro Wednesday night. And then Friday morning, we are heading out to Edmonton. So I wanted to make sure I had an episode done for you guys on Sunday. And I certainly wasn't going to record anything on Sunday. So I actually interviewed a returning guest, Jeremy Cornish. Tremendous guest. And I interviewed Jeremy way, way back on episode 21. And of course, you know how we do it around here. And we covered his entire career from junior to pro. And, I've wanted to get him back for a while now, but of course, his wife and his kids, of course, they live in the UK where he's a school teacher now. And, so of course, with the time difference, 7 hours, it's a little tough, but, we managed to finally, set up a time and we got, cause I wanted to bring him back for the five toughest opponents, which we did. And not only did we do that, but he also wanted to talk about his five toughest teammates. So he threw that in. So yeah, it's fun. We talked about, I think, 45 minutes to about an hour around there, give or take. And like I said, really nice guy, always fun to talk to. We actually bring this up in the interview, but it's funny because he's also a fight fan. I don't know, it sounds funny because you're like, what does that mean? You know, well, not only obviously was he an enforcer and everything else, but before he was playing junior and all that stuff, he had fight tapes and he was a fight fan. And was a fight fan throughout his career. And he talks about it in the interview. On his wall, he has a picture of when he was a massive Mel Engelstad fan. And, you know, he grew up in Ontario and they went to some Thunder Bay games in the old Colonial League. And he was just focused on Mad Mel and he was a massive fan. So fast forward years later in the UK, he fights Mel when Mel plays for Belfast. And he actually got the picture signed. And he said it's up on his office wall. And because he is a fight fan. So, but yes, Jeremy was a great guest, great guy. And I think you guys will really dig this interview. And like I said, and just an exciting fighter. And for those of you that are kind of you're not really familiar, well, make yourself familiar. That's the point of these shows and the interviews. Paul, of course, who runs the UK Fight YouTube channel, actually recently just did an updated version of Jeremy's Fight DVD that he put on to YouTube, and it's like 2 and some hour, because Jeremy was one of the players, one of the few, again, being a fan, one of the few guys that collected his footage when he was playing. So he's got junior stuff and Central League stuff and, of course, the UK stuff, and it's all out there for us to view. And I'll tell you, folks, have I ever steered you wrong? I mean, other than those few times, have I ever steered you wrong? Seriously, though, joking aside, YouTube, Jeremy Cornish, believe me, you will not be disappointed. Lefty, wide open, you know, give one to take one, and or take one to give one. And, yeah, you'll have, believe me, go down the rabbit hole. You will have a lot of fun watching Jeremy Cornish throw down. So, and after that, come listen to the interview. You'll dig it. So, but like I said, guys, I wanted to get that done and get it out there for you. So, you know, you weren't listening to Dead Air on Sunday. See, teammates, man, good to you. I'm here picking you up. But, other than that, I'm not going to talk for too long. As I say, please follow me on social media, on Twitter as well as on Facebook, Fourthline Voice on Twitter as well as on Facebook, and on YouTube. I have over 2,500 videos on there. Just hit the subscribe button. Whatever league you look for, everything's sorted, OHL, NHL, WHL, whatever, type it in, boom, up it'll come. Also, Alec at the 5 for Fighting podcast, not only check out his podcast, it's been a while since he's put out an episode. They're actually busy in the process of house hunting and trying to put money down and all that nonsense that comes with that, shenanigans, buying a house. So he has been otherwise, life is getting in the way, but he has not retired the podcast or anything. It's just on a temporary hold, but he does have a tremendous back catalog. Frank Bialowis, Rob Ray, Jason Rushton, on and on. Go check it out. Tremendous. In fact, this past Wednesday, I had him on. He helped me out as well as Jay down in Iowa there. We did the Ice Wars preview show, and I always enjoy having those two jokers on. And we were on there for hours. The episode is an hour as long. I think it's about an hour and a bit, but we were yapping for hours before we got going, drinking beers and yelling nonsense. But it's always fun having them on. But so that was Wednesday's episode. But Five for Fighting podcast. Give it a listen. And as well as on YouTube, he put up all the East Coast League fights from this past season. And, so subscribe to his channel as well. We're trying to get, Alec to 1,000 subscribers. So if you could do that, that would be tremendous. Other than that, folks, I'm going to shut up because, I just have to go do some stuff in the backyard. And then, I am hopefully interviewing someone Thursday night. And hopefully, I'm not going to call out names in case it doesn't happen. So I will have that interview ready to go too. So that'll be, to actually be ahead of the game for once. That would be nice. of course, you're listening to this on Sunday or Monday, perhaps on your commute to work. This coming Wednesday, I am going to do my Ice Wars review show, as well as just my trip to Edmonton and some of the conversations I had with the guys at the event. And because I will be bouncing around, talking to everybody out there and maybe doing some videos and putting that up on my social media. And, I think I'm going to be a little more active, at this event. I'm hoping to be a little more active at this event than I was at the first one. I did have some video up on the first one, but I'm trying to do a little more this time. So that's my goal anyway. But anyway, But Wednesday, I will have some stories for you. Because always, there's always some whatnot that happens while we go on road trips. So I'll share some stories with you. And then, hopefully the Sunday, I will have the interview for you. So anyway, guys, that enough of me talking. Let's get into it here. As I said, this is 5 toughest opponents and 5 toughest teammates with Jeremy Cornish. Please go back and check out Jeremy's full interview. Like I said, episode 21. And please check out the back catalog. Like I said, 231 other episodes to go check out. For those of you guys that tune in, like I always say, I appreciate it. I know there's a million podcasts out there to listen to. The fact that you chose this one, I greatly appreciate it. And I try my best for you guys anyway, and hopefully you're taking the journey with me, and we'll see what happens. We'll see where it goes. There's always some twists and turns, right? So, but here we go, folks. This is my conversation with Jeremy Cornish. Enjoy, and yeah, I'll talk to you guys again on Wednesday. Thanks, everybody. All right, here on the Fourth Line Voice, returning guest, all the way out from the UK, Jeremy Cornish. Jeremy, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, thanks, Darren. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for the big return. It's been a long time. For those listening, Jeremy was on the show way back in episode 21, and we went through his entire career from junior all the way to through pro, and talked about everything under the sun. But I think today, on the return, we're going to talk about it's part of the five toughest opponents series, and I've had a number of gentlemen come back on the show, Marcus Lofalo, Wade Brookbank, etc., to do this. But Jeremy's added a twist to it. He said, I'm going to do my five toughest teammates as well. So I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be good.
Yeah, I'm good. I've got to give a shout out to John and Paul, who helped me with the list as well. So big shout out to them.
Well, here we go. We're already sullying the good name of this show by throwing those two out, I'm telling you. Yeah. Yes.
No, they're great. They are. Actually, we came up with three lists, and all three were very, very similar. So they're pretty close to the mark.
Yeah.
They know their stuff better than I do.
They do. And I will say, Paul, of course, is the owner and creator of the UK Fight Channel. I'm sure everybody listening has watched a million fights on that channel. And of course, John Searson, I've had that guy on this show. I've been desperate enough to have him on my show like three or four times. Tells you how desperate I was getting. And, it is. Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, but he works cheap. So, you know, we bring him on. He's the UK correspondent for the Fourth Line Voice, but he does a good job. And they're definitely, like you said, they're definitely passionate hockey fans, and, they know what they're talking about.
They sure do.
Yeah.
They definitely do.
Yeah. So, I'm interested to, we'll see this collaborative list here, but, what do you want to do first? Do you want to do your toughest opponents or your toughest teammates?
I think we'll do the opponents first, starting right back from five. What do you think?
I think so. Here we go.
Okay. Well, I think we have to lay the ground rules. I think that we have the toughest names, if that makes sense. So some of the names were towards the end of their career or kind of in the middle, maybe. I don't think it's really judged on how my fights with them went, but just on the actual names of the tough guys. Does that make sense?
I get you. I get you. Yeah.
Yeah. Starting with number five.
Okay.
Marty Melnichuk.
The meat grinder. We're off to a hot start right now. There you go.
Well, he beat me up twice in one game, so he definitely makes the list. So I fought him. He was in Missouri, and I was in Flint. Did I tell you on the first podcast the story about him?
Well, I mean, we have a number of new listeners. We can retell it. Let's hear it again.
So just remember, we're in Missouri, and I remember the bus pulls up, and we get out, and everyone's bringing their gear into the room, and Melnichuk is riding a stationary bike out front of our locker room with no shirt on. And the guys were just like, holy Christ, who is this guy? And then I fought him twice in that game, and he dropped me both times. And then I think right after the game, he had popped over and said, good job, kid, or whatever. I think I was about 21 at the time. But he was tough, really tough.
Well, and that's the thing that we should probably, like, did you know, I mean, obviously you heard the name, but did you know anything about him? Like, did you know lefty or righty or how he fought, or had you ever seen him? Like,
no, I don't think at that stage. I was pretty naive and just a kid then. But that is the welcome to minor league hockey, when you see someone like him with no shoulder pads on and the big leather straps. You know, like he was big, and I was just a skinny kid. So just real seasoned guy, wasn't he, at that time? He was just tough as nails.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's definitely a hot start. Was he one of those guys, like when you're with, like in the warm-ups and stuff, was he barking and yelling and letting everybody know?
No, I don't think, not against us, I don't think at that time. I was only in Flint for a few months, but no, I don't think so. Like, I think he was just, you could see him, right? Like, no shoulder pads on. We wore helmets and warm up by that time, but, you know, he just the way he skated, he knew, he just, you know, hands at the side, you know, you just knew that he was the guy, big leather straps and.
Yeah. Just kind of had that presence.
Yeah, you just knew the name, and you saw the game notes, and obviously I was always a minor league fight fan before that even anyway, so I would have known who he was, but, you know, YouTube and stuff weren't around back then, so I wouldn't have known anything about him, really.
Were you a big Red Line Cruiser barking guy?
No, the odd time maybe, but not back then, because I was so young, really. I think probably when I came over here, I would do a bit of that against certain guys that I, you know, if someone was, like, staring at you or something. I didn't really go at that very often, no. I did roam the red line a bit, though, from time to time.
yeah. Who was famous for that? Like, would do it all the time and get yappy and stuff, and you're just like, oh, God, here we go.
I don't know who would have been famous for it, but I remember when Rushton came over. He came over to Belfast. And I fought him twice in one weekend, and he was doing, like, I played in Basingstoke, and we had such a poor team. I think we had about 12 players at the time. He was just roaming the red line, staring at me, barking at me, and I was just thinking, like, come on. Like, here we go. Like, I was older then, and I was just thinking, what is this guy doing? Because he's, you know, putting on the show, and we had probably lost about 20 games in a row at that time, and I was just thinking, oh, Christ, we got to do this. So I fought him on the Saturday nights, and then in the box he was saying, we need to go again, we're going again, and I was just thinking, no, we're definitely not going again, I'm double shifting here, and that never ever ever happened except for that season. So then we ended up going again on the Sunday, and he told me he didn't get a fight bonus if he fought on the road, so he didn't want to fight me the next night, so I just had to kind of drop my gloves and go after him. But so he was kind of just that memory of him barking and chirping on the red line. I can't really recall anybody else doing it very much. But yeah.
well, there we go. We got the meat grinder at number five.
Number four, Chris McAllister.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So he was at the tail end of his career. Really nice guy. Like, just I've had an opportunity to have a few drinks with him after that when he was in Newcastle. My wife's from Newcastle, so I would see him up there when he played there just a couple different times, had a beer with him, and just a really, really nice guy. I think I fought him twice, probably the same, probably that year I was in Basingstoke, I think. And I think they're on YouTube, but I think it's just twice. Once in, I don't know if they both were in Newcastle, I can't remember, but I do remember one in Newcastle where he was big, and he, when you kind of grabbed on, you knew he could take your head clean off if he wanted to. And I'm pretty sure we threw back and forth, and I'm pretty sure, I'd have to look it back up, and I'm pretty sure he let up on me at the end, because I think he kind of pulled me towards him, and I was kind of going downwards, and I think he could have hit me probably with an uppercut or something and taken my head clean off, but he didn't. Just a super tough guy, and that was towards the end of his career, so God only knows how tough he was at 25, 26, 27.
Yeah, and I mean, he would be like a 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? And at that time, he's probably 250, 260, like just heavy.
Yeah, and how tall were you?
6'3", 6'4".
Yeah, so I mean, but still, you're still looking up, you know, and...
It's just the power of those, like, those guys are big, do you know what I mean? Like, they're just men.
Yeah.
They're just big guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's 250, but it could be spread out differently, right?
I remember fighting that Radisavonis when I was in Port Huron, and he was 250, but he was jacked.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just all muscle.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw a picture of that guy. Like, that guy looked like he fell off the cover of Muscle and Fitness. Like, he looked like a bodybuilder. Like,
yeah, it was, that's a whole other. Actually, he didn't make the list. He should have maybe been put in there somewhere. Forgot about him.
But like when a guy like McAllister grabs you, like you know you've been grabbed, right? Like it's like, is there like a different, just a different kind of grip strength? And
it is, yeah, it's just totally different. We'll get that towards the top of my list, actually. I'll talk more about that. I think it's like riding a bull, I would imagine. But the thing is, with Chris, he wasn't mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he fought me. I don't know what had happened, but we fought. I don't remember how it happened, but we ended up fighting. I don't know if I had to ask him, but maybe he fought because I had played for Newcastle the previous 2 years. So maybe he didn't, you know, I didn't want to fight Payet at that time, you know, or Ferrone, because we were quite good friends. So don't really know.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. McAllister, Melnichuk.
Yeah. Okay. Number three is Steve McIntyre. But we both were kids when we fought, so it's strictly by the name of what he had become, really.
Yeah.
If I think he's a similar age than me, maybe a year or two younger. I was in Flint as well, so I was 21, maybe turning 22, and he might have been 20 or 19. I don't know what the age was. 22, maybe. I don't know. Anyways, that's more about the name of who I'd fought, not the actual. I think if we had both fought 5 years later, he probably would have killed me. If that makes sense.
No, I hear you. Well, to go, like you say, like, so, I mean, he's about the same height as McAllister. So, yep. You know, and same weight and everything. When you're fighting a guy like that, I mean, I know you were a toe-to-toe guy, whatever. But with that, were you still, like, were you trying to figure, okay, I'm, like, did you have a game plan? I'm like, okay, I'm going to work inside with these guys. Or is you still at that point just like, ah, screw it. I just want to stick my chin out and go and we'll see.
Yeah, I think at times if I felt that I was in trouble, I would then get my head in tight. But other than that, I would throw. I think that McIntyre fight, that was a long time ago. I think I probably got myself in trouble towards the end. But I think I was fine throughout the first half of the fight, no problem. It's just so hard to discuss. I'm surprised it doesn't get talked about more so, about like, so me fighting him at 20 or 21 compared to if I had to fight him at 28, it just would have been a totally different thing. Like McAllister was a bear. I didn't get that with McIntyre, but I'm sure he developed, obviously he was the toughest in the NHL at one point. So he obviously developed into that. And I got stronger as well as the years went on. So, just another tough guy, big guy, and he did really well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And it's interesting though, because it's not a disrespect to these guys. They probably agree with me. Like you said, they're both Saskatoon guys. So I watched them from junior on. I've known them since they were 16, both of them. Well, McAllister and I are the same age. So, so watching them. I guess if there was a weakness in their game or whatever, it probably was that both of them were too nice.
Yeah.
At points. Yeah. And I think they left, and it was kind of, I don't know, a few guys that had talked about McIntyre. I mean, it was always sort of, it was react instead of act. Mm-hmm. So they're like, you know, like if he would have been mad and maybe pushed the issue more as a bully, he might have played longer in the NHL, maybe, instead of just letting everybody reacting to everything. Because at the same time, it's like, who's going to go start anything with him, right? It's like, just let him sleep then and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that was always, I've heard from a few coaches, that was always sort of the knock, that they were too nice, you know?
Yeah, which I think it's well documented with Chris that's how, like, it's not something he enjoyed. He was fucking good at it. But, it takes a mean streak. I think, like, one thing I made sure of when I played is I didn't befriend any of these guys. You know, I wasn't anybody's mates, and I didn't, you know, I had to have that mindset. And that's why I couldn't mentally go to play in the Quebec League. I just didn't have that mindset. I wasn't wired up like.
Yeah, you were just saying, yeah, you weren't wired like that in the Quebec. That's why you couldn't go to the Quebec League. You weren't wired
like that. I just couldn't do that. I just wasn't wired up like that. I had to always have that in my mindset, was that I hate you. That's why I have to fight you.
Well, that always made more sense to me. Like it was never, I'm not your friend. I don't want to be your friend. Like, it's, to me, that would make it a lot easier. Like, that would be easier than, yeah, okay, let's hang out and be friends and what. Like, I don't know. To me, that just seems weird. I don't know.
Well, even to this day, there's just nothing worse than patting a guy after a fight. Like, I just think that is just the worst possible thing to do. I know a lot of guys think that's loyal and great and to give him a tap after, but that's not what fighting in the game was about. It's an intimidation intimidation thing. And if you're giving a guy a high five after, you just lose that right away.
Well, yeah, it's like, what would you fight for then? You know, like, if you're not...
Exactly.
I mean, that's a whole other topic. I know you and I, in our first episode, we actually talked at a fairly lengthy about that issue, but it was like, yeah, exactly. And I've ranted and raved on multiple episodes about this code horse shit that people talk about. And it's just like, what are we doing? It's a bully. That's what the job is. You're an asshole. I mean, it's not to be nice. Like, I don't understand.
That's right.
Like, oh, it's just so sportsmanship. It's like, what is there? It's a fist fight on ice. What is there to be a sportsman about? Like, I don't.
Nothing.
No. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't, I always, like you said, well, you know, you and I are roughly close to the same age. It's like, I don't think Probert and McSorley and Twist were ever thinking about sportsmanship. Like, that's...
No, and they never tapped each other on the... they never tapped someone on the helmet after they were done.
No, like, Dave Semenko did not strike me as a sportsman. You know?
No, but they fought, you know, they fought the right way and they fought loyal. But, like, I can imagine if someone tried... I'm sure lots of guys said, well done to Probert after. And I can't imagine him saying too much back or shaking his hand or maybe after the game, but... It's just not the way the game is meant to be played.
I would know exactly, but there we go. Well, we got three monsters already. So number two,
right? The next one is Mad Mal Engelstad.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, you got a lot of trouble with guys from Saskatchewan. I'm thinking that's what it's coming down to here.
That's probably where the toughest guys come from, obviously.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I absolutely idolized Mel. I've told you before, and the other time I was on, I was just a minor league nerd, you know, through junior and stuff. And even before junior, my dad took me to an old Colonial League game years, you know, when I was about 15 or 16. And I just was glued to minor league hockey and, you know, the back pages of the hockey news, reading the stats. And, you know, just Mel Engelstad's name just always would pop up. So when I got a chance to fight him, I actually got a picture signed of it. It's in my office at home. So we fought in Belfast. We fought in the far corner in Belfast, and I remember asking him to go early in the game, and he was like, "Yep, no problem." So we dropped the gloves square off, and I had to wear a visor. But if you're born before 1974, I think it is, you don't have to wear a visor in the UK. So he didn't wear a visor, and I took my helmet off. I remember I might have told you this already. I can't remember. But then Mel didn't take his helmet off, and Karen's just yelled at him, "Take your effing helmet off, Mel." And then Mel took his helmet off, and then we fought. It was a good fight. It was a good fight. He was strong, but he was, you know, another guy that was on the back end. But after I was in the box, we come out of the box, and he fought Cairns, and it was one of the best fights I've ever seen.
That fight with Cairns is insane.
Oh, I was right beside it on the ice, and I could just hear the smacking. I've told people that before, but... Just it was just mental how they went at it. My fight was short and sweet, thank God. But they went right at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was quite cool to fight him, and I've got the picture here beside me. It just says, and actually when he signed it, he says the picture says it all, and then he signed it underneath. So it's quite cool for me to have that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is sweet. Mad Mel, there you go. Well, well, that was a funny thing. Like when you and I were talking, even like going back to your first episode, but I know when we were going to do this, I kind of, you know, went back and I watched, you know, Paul's video that he had put up of you there on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then some of that. And then I was just looking at your fight card, and it was just like, man, you didn't pick spots. I'll give you that, man. Your fight card is awesome.
Yeah, thanks for that. I appreciate that. Quite proud of that. Just never saying no. So probably should have the odd time, but...
Yeah. Well, I'll ask you. We'll do number one here. I had a few follow-up questions, but number one, here we go. Jeremy Corners, the five toughest opponents. We're at number one.
Wade Belak.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
No question.
Yeah.
Now that was a hold on for dear life situation. Both times I fought him. The first time I fought him was in Coventry. I think I went in just to finish my check on him. He cross-checked me and immediately dropped his gloves. So it was I had him tied up quite well. Excuse me, I just need to take a drink. Getting all nervous talking about it. bringing bad memories back. So I went in the corner, finished my check on him. He cross-checks me. Gloves come immediately off from what I remember. And then we just started throwing. I don't really remember exactly. I'm pretty sure I tried switching up so I could throw lefts. And then I let go of his left hand, and he just drilled me right under. I had the visor on still. He had a visor on. And he drilled me in the temple, cut me. But we just kept going. And then I probably fell at the end. But he was, that was like literally riding a bull. Like he was just, his shoulders were wide. He was strong. The second time I fought him was in London. He had hit one of our small British players at center ice, just took his head clean off. So I jumped over the boards, jumped him. Then he was like on the ice, kind of covering up. And I punched him in the back of the head. And then when he got up, I thought, shit, I'm in trouble here. So then I got like my elbow pads and everything off, and then we fought, and I just tried tying up at the end. But yeah, so two fights with him, super tough, super, super tough guy. And the best thing about that was Eric Cairns, who I played with, was quite friendly with him. And earlier in the year, I asked him if he'd introduce me to him, and he's like, no, I'm not introducing you to him because you're going to end up fighting him this year for sure. And then we did have a couple fights. Super tough guy, and shame what had happened to him.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. There you go. Another Saskatchewan guy. Watched him play with the Blades and met him a number of times. Nice guy. But yeah, well, and the thing was, is when you fought him, that was sort of right in his prime, too. Like, he really
was. I want to say he was top three in the NHL at that time.
I'd say so, yeah.
And I held in with him both times. So just those are the things that make you think, what was I doing over here at that time? But that doesn't matter now. But that is something I do think back about, because he was, he was easily top three at that time.
Yeah, him and Cairns both were. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you said, like, right at the start, when you went in to hit him and he crossed you, had anything led up to that? Like, were you guys having words or?
No, I don't know. He was just like, he was ruthless, eh? Like, he didn't come over here for a party. He didn't come over here for a party. Like, he came over here and he played hard. Like, he was not messing about. I don't think he wanted to fight necessarily. Like, he didn't square off. He didn't offer to square off. He didn't take his helmet off or anything like that. Like, he obviously had to take care of himself. He didn't want to be getting hurt playing in the UK when, you know, he's on an NHL contract, really. So he was ruthless. He didn't give a shit one bit. He was going hard.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was going to say, Cairns was the same way, right?
Yeah, Cairns did not mess around either.
Yeah.
No, they both came to play. And that was, you know, who was the big tall guy that played Nottingham at that time? He played in Pittsburgh, played in LA.
Oh, McKenna?
Yeah, so he was over here, but he was over here to be a good guy. Like, he wasn't interested at all.
Yeah.
And there was a few others over here that year that were just here for a bit of a skate around. But, like, Bielak was mean. Proper mean.
Yeah, well, and I always say with that, like, I was surprised that the number of times they fought, that he fought. And I was actually really surprised that him and Cairns fought. Because I was like, I didn't think, like, you know what I mean? Like, the NHL, the brothers. I didn't think the old brothers would fight, right? Like, Union brothers. But, yeah, like you said, they were both there, and they were both playing. They were playing mean, and they were playing to win. Like,
yeah, we got that game was, I can't remember if that was a playoff game that they fought, but I fought Payet right before that. I just think it was just, we just had a really heated rivalry with them. We were really tough. Like, we had Dennis Maxwell, Karen Z, myself, Jason Robinson was a really tough defenseman. Like, we just did not, it was just two really tough teams. And then Coventry had Payet and Bielak, so it was just two teams. And Coventry were much more skilled than us. They were a better team. But they just didn't mess around. So give them both props, Cairns and Bielak, for when they came over, because they played hard.
Yeah. I know we talked about it in the first interview, and I mean, we're obviously rehashing some stuff, but for the sake, we have new listeners. Like, how was, like, Cairns over there with you guys in London? Was he cool, or, like, did he kind of big league anybody, or was he all right?
Oh, absolutely not. He was just one of the guys. He was awesome for me. I'll get to my teammate list, and there's a couple on there that helped me with my, you know, fighting game, as it were. Actually, quite a few on that list. A couple of them, anyways, helped me with my fighting game. But Cairnsey was unbelievable, like tactically how to fight. He fought different than me. He was big, so he could grab the middle of the jersey, and he could switch where I would focus in on getting that right hand and throw my left as hard and fast as I could. That was kind of my thought process. But he was, you know, he was a smart fighter, and he was big and strong. And, you know, we wrestled around after practice the odd time, and it was awesome having him. I got to room with him on the road a few times, and he was really good. No big league in at all. No, he was one of the guys.
Well, and like you've mentioned a couple times, and I know you're a fight nerd too. You're not only just an enforcer and a hockey player, but you were a fight fan as well. Yeah. Like when you were on the road with him, was it just like friggin' 20 questions? Were you like just peppering him with like NHL stuff? Like
I don't know really. Once again, that's a long time ago. I probably should have been more so. I think we did get stories out of him and stuff. Yeah, I think probably, especially with the fight stuff, asking guys he had fought and things like that. So, but at that time, you know, he was him and Bielak. I don't know who else would have been tougher at that time than him and Bielak in the NHL. The Rock, maybe.
Yeah, and Brashear. I mean, those would kind of be the four guys that I would have.
I think so.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like you said, the two of those guys, they came over to the UK and played it tough. Brashear went to the LNAH. I mean, which I could not believe he did that, and he fought a whole bunch of, well, it's the LNAH, you're not going to have any choice, especially with those guys who just be chomping at the bit to fight him.
That's right.
You know, so it's like those guys, I mean, like you said, a lot of the NHL guys went and, you know, it was a paid vacation for a lot of them, but some of them, they kept their chops anyway, their fighting chops in check, so.
Yeah, well, those guys are wired up different, aren't they?
yeah, absolutely. In all your fights and everything, was this like, I mean, I know those are your five toughest opponents and all that, but was there any fight that you were in when like a guy hit you and it was just like, it was just a different level of power? Like you're just,
Yeah, I think I came out pretty, like all those guys on the list, like there's a couple other guys that like honorable mentions because of how they hit. And the first one was this Adam Stefanchuk kid from Edinburgh. Do you remember that name?
Yep. Like, WHL kid, yep.
He could just throw cinder blocks, and he could throw both hands, and he was small, which I hated fighting guys that were smaller than me. Absolutely hated it. Like, he would just throw. There was one night we were playing in Edinburgh, and he ran our goalie accidentally, but obviously I had to fight him after, and I had a massive black eye. And I remember we were having our Christmas break after, and the whole Christmas break I just had this swollen up eye. He was just super tough. He threw both hands. And the other one was a real tough guy was Reagan Darby.
Yep.
And I always did well against Reagan. It was no problem. But I remember like the welts on my head from him just because he threw hard.
Yeah, it was like, yeah. Like I've had guys on that have talked about that. And they talk about like how hard Ferone threw and how hard he hit, how hard Ferone would hit. And they're like, they were surprised by it because he's so slight, right? And they were just like, you know, but all of a sudden they hit you and it was like, oh my God, like your body shook, right? And it was just like.
And square, yeah, in both hands, no problem. We'll get to him in a second.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the fighting, again, I mean, I know we went over this, but I always ask the guy, I always find it fascinating just to kind of get different guys' approach to fighting and the science of it and all that sort of thing. Did you kind of like the immediate get into it, or were you a square off guy? Did you prefer to square off?
Yeah, I squared off most of the time.
Now, okay, so now that you're squaring off, did you want them to come to you, or did you go to them? What did you prefer to do?
I think the rule of thumb is to let them come to you, but then I think a lot of the time I would be focusing on that right arm, because I'm a lefty, obviously, so I had my left out of the way. And I think a lot of the fights, if you look back, I'm pretty sure I ducked quite a few right hands to start, and then I would grab. I think sometimes if I didn't get the right grab, I would maybe take a couple and then try to get the right grab. There's a couple fights with Schmier where I had him just in the center of the shirt, and that wasn't good with him because he was tough as well. So I'd just take a couple, get the grab, and then start swinging.
Do you ever, I mean, you know, with age comes wisdom and everything else, and you kind of look back on it and whatever. Was there times when you're sort of like, instead of toe to toe all the time, maybe I should have done a little more little more ducking, so to speak? Like, do you ever look back on it and maybe I should have refined my technique a little bit? Or were you just like, that's the only way you knew how to do it? And I'm just going to go.
I don't know. Then I would have turned into how the guys fight now, wouldn't have I?
Well, kind of. I don't know. I mean, you could have done the Rocky Thompson chuck and duck kind of thing because he was left-handed too.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe a bit, but I'm quite proud of how I stood in and did it. I think I watched
the fights
now. I think I was pretty good if I knew I was in trouble to get in close and then readjust. I just like throwing fast and hard at the start and then seeing how it would go. Rolling the dice, really, I guess.
Yeah, like, I mean, I just, like, oh, yeah, well, I mean, as strictly as a fan sitting here, oh, yeah, you were entertaining as shit. I mean, that was, yeah. I mean, I always say, like, guys like you and, like, Rocky, like, you video fighters, right? Like, it's, and Mel and guys like that, there's no jersey, yeah, it's just toe-to-toe, right? So,
yeah.
But I was just thinking, like, just looking back on it, you think maybe every once in a while you're like, yeah, maybe I should have employed a little more defense, but.
Yeah, I think probably at times. But when you get hit and when you get knocked out like that, you don't even see it coming.
Yeah.
That's the problem. So it's maybe at times, yeah.
Like some unnecessary damage sometimes that could have maybe been avoided.
How about not the style, but maybe the unnecessary fights?
Well, yeah. Well, there you go, right? Yeah.
So some of them you fought someone for this, you know, at the time. It's a little bit different when I don't have any regrets of the fights early in the season to kind of set the tone and all. I don't have any problem with that, but there's sometimes, like that Stefanchin fight I just told you about where he accidentally ran the goalie. I didn't need to fight him in Edinburgh on a Sunday night. There was no need to bother fighting him. So those fights I regret, I would say, the senseless ones. But no, I don't have any regrets with how I did it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if you should have been maybe a little more selective sometimes, but.
Well, yeah, because you know who else I fought in Edinburgh was Oduya.
Yeah.
I fought him one night. Just, it was a nothing game. And he ended up cutting me over the eye. And I was just thinking, why did I do that? So there's probably those fights that had no bearing on the game that you think, why did you bother?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the fights you're bringing up, of course, they're like, you're older. Like when you were in like Memphis and you're younger and stuff, I guess, every time's a good time. You know, it's just like, whatever, let's go. Like, you're not really thinking of it at that point, you know.
No, that's exactly right.
Well, I guess everything's about establishing yourself too, right? I mean, you know, so, yeah, every time's a good time, I guess, you know. But when you get over to the UK, yeah, you maybe start wondering, yeah, maybe not tonight.
That should have been the approach some nights, I think.
Well, yeah.
But anyways, it's over now.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, I guess, like I said, as a fan, I can appreciate it, you know, for sure. So that was five. That was a hell of a list, man. Well, now we got the five toughest teammates. This should be interesting.
Right. So number five, I'm going to go with Payet.
No, well,
Andre.
Yeah,
he was tough. He fought everybody. I fought him twice and did really well against him, but I don't think that has any bearing on actually how tough he was. And he was a decent player as well. So he fought everybody. He not very often said no. And that's one thing I respect about him. Tough, tough guy. Threw hard and threw fast.
Yeah. Well, strong. Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, did it for a long time. And I didn't realize how long he was over in the UK for, but yeah, like he was there for 10 years, played in that league.
In his fight card before he even came over, like I was scared to death of him the first time I fought him in Coventry. We just both fell immediately. We squared off at center and we both just fell. And in the penalty box, he was just giving me loads of mouth about me not, you know, just a Central League guy coming over, that sort of stuff. And like I said, I did really well against him the other two times, but he was super tough, and he fought everybody.
Yeah, and like you said, with these guys, in terms of, and especially as a teammate, I mean, like strength in numbers, right? I mean,
it's
you know, did you ever have, and you don't have to throw out any names or whatever, but just, did you ever have a guy where you sensed it was like, it was, even though they were teammates, there was like a competition? Or he kind of, maybe he resented you a little bit being there? Did you ever get that from anybody?
No, I didn't, because it was quite in Newcastle that year. We had obviously three lines of forwards, and it was Ferrone, Payet, and me, which was just unbelievably tough. No, I didn't have that anywhere I played. No, I never had that problem.
Yeah, well,
some teams I was the only guy, and some teams you had three or four, so it just depended where it was. No, I never had any animosity like that, no.
Yeah, well, I was sitting there as I'm saying it. I'm like, back then, of course, when you're playing, it was like, yeah, in the Central League, I mean, I would think guys would want two or three helpers, so to speak, in that league back then. So, yeah, now that I'm saying it, I don't know anybody that would actually probably be bitter that somebody else was there, too. Like, you're not taking...
Yeah, no. It's always good to have the help.
Yeah, I was going to say, that might be an American League or an NHL thing, maybe, but not a Central Hockey League in the 2000s thing.
No, more the merrier.
Yeah, now that I'm saying it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And number four was Roger Maxwell.
See, this is... Yes. Well, yeah. How large is that? There's a large human that did it for a long time.
He was awesome. I played with him in San Angelo my second year. He was just an awesome guy. Calm, cool. Just a really nice guy. And he did it for a long time.
Yeah.
Don't know how long he was with. I don't think he was there. He wasn't there the full season. He was maybe there till Christmas or something. Don't know where he went. He was in Long Beach. I don't know if he went there before or after. I can't really remember. But he was an awesome teammate. He was so cool. Just chill as anything.
He was in Long Beach. He only played 19 games that year with you guys in Senate.
Yeah.
But yeah, like in terms of that, like when you have a guy like that, obviously I'm assuming you guys obviously sat and talked fighting and like.
Yeah, I'd just go over to his place and he's probably thinking, what's this kid doing coming over here? But I just go hang out with him and just obviously being a fighting nerd. I just loved grilling him and asking him questions. He was a good teammate.
Yeah, like, and like in terms of like actual fighting, like at practice, you know, like messing around with stuff. What would something what would you try to take from a Roger Maxwell that you could use?
Well, just about how to tie up and how to wrestle and that sort. Like it's so hard for me to remember that far back. Like,
yeah,
like I was just a kid and he was a seasoned veteran, so you kind of had to not bother him too much. But you know, the other guy that wasn't a tough guy that took a lot of time with me from that year was Paul Vincent. Do you remember that name?
I do. Yeah,
he was just unbelievable. Like he skating and receiving pucks, and he was just that. Those two guys were good for me that year. You know, Paul Vincent was great.
I want to say he's an NHL. He works for an NHL team now, I believe.
That's his dad. That was his dad.
Okay.
So Paul lives in Holland. He's been there for years.
Okay.
He was about 6'5". He was like 6'5", 220, and you'll never see a more gifted hockey player. He used a straight stick, could just swap hands going down the wing. Like, he was just so talented and gifted.
Yeah.
And he ended up over here for years. He's still over here now. But yeah, so I just remember from that year, I really remember those two veteran guys.
Well, there you go. Roger Maxwell, yep.
Number three. This guy was really at the tail end of his career, but was unbelievable. Dodie Wood.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't think he fought when he was with us in Memphis, and he was only there for a handful of games. But like I said at the start, it's about the names on the list. So he was awesome in Kansas City, and when he went to San Jose, and he was a good teammate while he was there.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, being like the fight nerd, right? I mean. I mean, you would have had Dodie Wood's fights probably ingrained in your head at that point.
Yeah, he was great. And he was funny as well. He used to put his shoulder pads on before his hockey pants, which I found really weird.
Yeah, and that guy was always, he was the first guy I ever saw. I mean, I'm not saying no one before had ever done it, but I had never seen anybody sort of employ it as a technique constantly, was the under the arm duck thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I mean, see it now, but I mean, he was the first one that I saw do it regularly. And
no, he was really technical when he fought.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was, pretty actually, I think a better player than people give him credit for, too. Like
he was an excellent hockey player.
Yeah, yeah. Like when he played in Seattle in the Western League, I mean, he had 30 goals and would fight everybody, and you know, and I know he had a couple, you know, had to be 15 goal seasons in the IHL.
Yeah.
You know, while fighting everyone, you know, so
yeah. And he wasn't very big.
No, no. I mean, I think, I'm looking, they got him listed at 5'11", but I doubt it. Like,
yeah, no, he was good. Just a short time I was with him. And number two is Paul Ferrone.
There you go.
Which we've discussed before. He was just, played with him for two seasons in Newcastle. I'd go to the boxing gym with him, and I'd never seen someone hit a heavy bag like him. It would just swing back and hit the ceiling and come back down.
Yeah, well, that's funny. There's another guy who played junior in Seattle. Like, Seattle had, like, the undersized enforcer market covered, cornered, because they had, like, him, Doty Wood, Tyler Willis. They had, like, all these guys, and they could just all... But, yeah, Ferrone was... Yeah, you go back and watch Paul Ferrone. I think he's sort of an unknown... or not unknown, that's the wrong word. But it's like... But he kind of flew under the radar. Like, he, you know, he didn't have the NHL time or the IHL or AHL... Well, he was in the AHL for a little while, but...
That's right.
But, I mean, like, I think a lot of people, just don't get to see him because the footage just isn't out there, right?
No, it isn't. No, especially with him, yeah.
Yeah.
It was crazy how tough he was. It was scary, the switch that would go off with him, and he was calm.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, right, both hands, it could hit real hard. And like I said, I've had guys in the show that they're like, oh, yeah, Ferrone. And initially, they're like, especially if you, like, slept on him, right? It was like, you know, and you would, like they said, you look at him and he's just, you know, whatever, 6 feet, 180, and you're just like, yeah, whatever, you know, he looks like a little geek. And then all of a sudden it's like he hits you and it's like, oh my God, like what nightmare am I in here? Like,
yeah, he would just tear people apart. It was, he fought some kid in Basingstoke, well, not a kid, some guy in Basingstoke one night, and he must have hit him 30 times, cut him all up, and I don't think the kid knew who he was.
Yeah,
I mean, he wasn't. I don't think the second year I played with him, I don't think he fought very much. I don't think he had to fight. Like, nobody would go near him.
Yeah.
Lots of room on the puck.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like, the same thing in the Western League, right? Like, it was just, the guys would just leave him alone because then, you know, yeah. Well, I mean, like, he got into it. Like, he was on my show and he was told the story. I don't know if he took... Now am I telling a story that was off air that I shouldn't be telling? Well, whatever, he won't care. But it was like, he got into it with the Kelowna team, and at that time they had Scott Parker, Todd Fedoruk, Chris Millett. Yeah. Like, Kelowna was just stacked team. And he got into it with them in Kelowna one night, or in Seattle one night, and he went on their bus by himself going after Fedoruk. And nobody,
that surprised me.
Yeah, and no one on Kelowna did any, they just all sat in their seats. Like, no one went after him. You just think of the guys that are on that Kelowna team, and they just like, who is this guy, right? Like, this guy is insane, right?
And he's quiet. He went about it the right way. He's quiet and just did it right.
Yeah, and that was the thing. And it's so weird, like, when I had him on the show and talked to him leading up to the show, and I've talked to him since, like, actually quite lengthy conversations on the phone, and he's like so quiet and like respectful. He's like, and everyone you talk to says, oh yeah, he's like the nicest person ever. And it's just like, but you know, like you said, right, that switch goes and it's like, you don't want to be around
He was one of the best teammates I ever had. He was just an unbelievable guy. We spent a lot of time together over those 2 years. I really enjoyed my time with him.
Yeah, and I've always enjoyed my conversations with Paul. He's like super nice and doing good things out in Vancouver. He's doing well for himself. But
I got back in touch with him after I listened to that podcast with you on him, with you.
Yeah, he was saying that.
Quite nice to get back in touch with him.
That's great. Yeah, it's excellent. Yeah, like you said, good dude. Yeah. All right.
So number one is Eric Cairns.
There you go. Yeah.
Which doesn't need much explanation. We've talked about him. He was awesome for us. And good for me, good for my career, and unbelievable teammate.
Yeah, man, it's like, it's interesting. As we're listing off the teammates, just I was looking at your HockeyDB there and the teams you played on. Yeah, you were fairly fortunate as well. I mean, you had some really tough teammates over the years.
Well, especially in London and Newcastle, I don't know if there'd be many. Well, you'd have to ask Paul and John for this, but I don't think there's been many tougher teams over here than that London team and that Newcastle team I played on. John will probably say some old Nottingham teams from like the early 2000s, but I don't buy it.
Well, like you said, well, just you and Ferron and Payet. Like, I mean, really? Like, is there? Yeah, I mean, what three? What like teams might have had? You know, yeah, but I mean, three deep, four deep in the UK league. Like,
yeah,
I can't.
Yeah, it was tough hockey back then.
Yeah,
but there's some, you know, there's some honorable mentions like Schmier and Kluche. You know, Chris Millett was tough. There's just loads of guys. When you get thinking about narrowing it down, it's quite tough to do.
Yeah, I forgot you played with Millett.
I didn't play with him. I played like I fought against him.
Oh, I was gonna say okay. I'm like, I didn't know you played. Yeah, okay. Yeah, Millett. Yeah, well, speaking of, I mean, he probably agree. I mean, it's. I mean, that like we said, that was the point before. I mean, that guy was an asshole. When he played, from what watching, he was mean as shit, that guy.
Yeah, he was proper mean. When I fought him, I did really well against him, but I think he was pretty banged up, and then I had to fight him again, and I didn't want to fight him, because I thought I got off lucky the first time, and then we fought again, and he stood straight up, and he could tie up, and he was smart.
Yep.
He was a smart fighter, but there's loads of guys, when you start thinking about it, that you can go back through. Lots of tough guys back then.
Oh, yeah, like that late night. Well, yeah, right when you... Well, yeah, I mean, you hit it right. I mean, you know, as a fight fan, I would say perfect. I mean, you're the one fighting them. You might not say it was a perfect timing, but, you know, right from, like, that 99 to that early 2000s, like, I mean, the United League and the Central League and East, like, those leagues were just stacked with guys.
Yeah.
And I mean, and then, like you said, then you get over to the UK. And I mean, for the UK for a while, it became, you know, every team had a guy, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But like you said, when you were there, there was teams going 2-3 deep in the UK.
Yeah, there were, yeah.
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 And like you said, and guys that you were fighting, like it wasn't like, oh, we're over here for the European vacation and whatever. Like, it was rough.
Yeah, I think some of them probably initially came over thinking it was going to be like that. And then when you played teams like the teams I played on, it never was like that. Because we didn't really let it happen.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's also the mindset in the room, right? I mean, yeah, if you let it happen, it happens, right? But
yeah.
But, well, there you go, man. That was a hell of a list of teammates and opponents. And, yeah. That was.
I'll be thinking all night now of other guys.
Well, I mean, yeah, like we were, I say before. Well, with your fight card, I mean, you know, we could do a top 25. Really, I mean, you know, with the names that are on there.
We'll save that for next time.
Oh yeah, we're certainly. It's always just tough with you guys over in the UK. Like even when I've tried to get Searson on a few times, it's just with the time difference and everything. But yeah. Yeah, there's still a few different things that I would definitely like to have you back on the show to do.
We should probably do one with those two, really. Because when I was asked, I spoke to them about the lists, and they were bringing up some old stories that I had kind of forgot about. So we should probably get on with the four of us, maybe.
Hey, there you go. They have like the UK roundtable, yeah, with those two, yeah. Well, yeah, and like you said, I imagine they could definitely jog your memory on a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I always find it interesting, like, with yourself and, like talking to, like, a guy like Wade Brookbank and guys like that. It's interesting with you guys. You grew up as, like, fight fans.
Yeah.
Like, some guys, they just played and fell into the role and whatever. And, oh, I watched Don Cherry sometimes, you know, Rock'em Sock'em videos. But, like Wade had like fight tapes and shit back in the day and, you know, and stuff like that. And I know. So it's interesting talking to guys like you, where you come from almost like a fight fan perspective. And then all of a sudden now you're doing it as well. Right. So it's interesting. When you could just talk about not only your career, but like, they know, like, you know, like you watched Dodie Wood when he was in San Jose or in Kansas City.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, where yep. Some guys are just like, I don't know, like, you know, whatever. Just, I saw him on YouTube a couple times. You know, they don't really know, right?
I knew all the guys.
Well, yeah, like, it was funny, I always laugh with, like, Spit and Chiglets, right? They have Bissonette on there, and somebody brings up Link Gates, and he's like, who's Link Gates?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't know, right? And it's just like, well, first of all, I'm like, really? No one ever talked about Link Gates in any dressing room you're ever in? Come on, man.
Yeah, even when I played junior, I played in Aurora, and we had some older guys on the team. Like, I even knew who Steve Durbano was when I was 16, 17 years old.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing, right? You're a fan. And it was so, yeah. It's like, yeah, so it's like, I was like talking to all the guys, but yeah, when you talk to like you or Brookbank or stuff, it's always interesting because it's like, yeah, you could just talk about kind of almost in depth about other guys because they, it's like, oh yeah, I remember when he fought this guy, and this guy
because yeah.
You had the tape, right? Or whatever, you watched it back in the day. So that's always sort of interesting as well. But
yeah, we'll do that sometime. We'll get the two of them on.
Oh yeah, we'll get those two jokers on and we could, yeah, we'll do all of it. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But hey, this is a lot of fun. And I really, I know we'd been setting it up for a while and you're a busy dude, man. And I know you got your vacation, everything coming up. So I really want to thank you for taking the time tonight to come on. It was great.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate it.
Well, take care, buddy.
You too.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?